Hello, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have an exciting show this morning. Let me get to that. But I first want to remind you that you can join us. All you have to do is write roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also go to wamc.org/roundtable and post your comment online. That way the whole world can read it. And isn't that exciting? It's a World Wide Web for a reason, and you can take advantage of it. wamc.org/roundtable. Let me introduce our panel to you. And I should note that the Daily Gazette editor, Judy Patrick, will be with us. She is on her way. I just got notification that she's in traffic.
Apparently there was a huge traffic thing on the I-88 to I-90 to I-90, Freebie 90.
Yeah. A bit of a snagglepuss. So she will be, she'll be coming in, and I'm sure is hearing us now. And Judy, we'll be here when you are.
So that's
great. Also, brand new to the panel this morning. We're very excited. We love newbies. And Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, we've been trying to get him for so long. Chris wrote me the other day and said, I'd love to be on. I said, hey, how's Wednesday?
Yeah, it didn't take long at all.
No, that's great.
We're not proud.
So your is, and I was going to ask you this beforehand, but we got talking about other stuff, but Times Union columnist?
That's
reporter,
right. Yeah.
Columnist,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah, columnist.
Which means it's good because he can have opinions.
Yes.
Unlike other reporters who pretend they don't have opinions.
And
I'm allowed to express mine openly.
He's a very, very good journalist and a stalwart of the paper, and we're thrilled to have him before our microphones and to be a part of our discussion.
Well, thank you very much.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and let us go to the issues at hand and start talking about what's going on. Of course, the big story yesterday was President Obama flexing his executive muscle on gun control. This from the Washington Post. President Obama went to the East Room of the White House on Tuesday, prepared to announce modest new restrictions on gun sales across the country. But the moment quickly turned into one of the most emotional public episodes of his presidency. The 37-minute speech became part eulogy, part admission of political failure, and part constitutional lecture on the Second Amendment. Eventually, the president cried, flanked by more than a dozen men and women, many of whom he had consoled privately shortly after they lost loved ones to gun violence. Obama summoned the memory of nearly two dozen children killed 3 years ago in their Connecticut school. He decided on the new curbs unilaterally, he said, because guns have cut short too many American lives. There seems to be, in the press coverage of this event, two main takeaways. One, of course, are the actions that he's calling for regarding guns. And the second was the emotional aspect and the fact, and I looked through about 15 major newspaper headlines this morning, and everyone either uses the word emotional or teary.
Well, it's kind of surprising, isn't it? Because he's one of the things that one of the criticisms you hear about him sometimes is that he is kind of unemotional or removed or aloof or So to see him tear up like that was, moving in its own way too.
Did you think so?
Yeah, I did.
Me too. Yeah. But I have to tell you, Chris, that there was a report this morning that somebody on one of the right-wing networks, I think it was Fox, but I can't prove it.
I know where you're going with this.
Said that he had purposely put an onion on the thing so he would cry.
Yeah,
that was so disgusting. So it made me so angry, really.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of cynicism out there, right? We all know that, but
not for me.
Never.
He seems to be. It seemed to be very genuine. Also, I would add that he had similar reactions. I think the last time we really saw him get this emotional was at the memorial service for those children in Connecticut. So it was not too far removed from that, number one. And two, it seemed in watching it from the beginning to the end, it was leading up to that with all of these people being flanked by these family members who obviously were victims of gun violence.
Yeah, when you consider who was in the room with him and all the people that
exactly.
He is, a lot of them are familiar faces to him too, which is kind of a sad commentary, but I mean, it'd be hard not to be emotional in a room with all these people who have lost loved ones, mm-hmm. Especially the Newtown families.
You know, we have Congresswoman Elizabeth Esty on our congressional corner all the time. She mm-hmm. represents, and you know, I can't believe anybody could be in a room with somebody who's lost a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. Or, I mean, the idea that these little helpless kids were wiped out by this madness is more than most people can handle. And Elizabeth Esty is great because she's really carried the ball, and she was up there standing right next to the president.
Yeah. Of course, one of the things is, though, that what he did yesterday will probably do nothing to stop things like Newtown from happening or any of the others.
Well, you know, Chris, I did a show yesterday, a Vox Pop yesterday afternoon on this subject, and a lot of people said that. Mm-hmm. And yet, what I think he was able to achieve yesterday was to bring this thing to the forefront and to say, this has to be dealt with. And the Congress isn't dealing with it. I go to the Congress, and they won't do anything. They won't do background checks. They won't do anything during this. They're all in the palm of the NRA, and he's absolutely right about that. So even, and by the way, he says, and I think he said, if there's one life saved by all of this, it'll be great.
Well, he's also putting it on the table for the presidential election.
Absolutely.
Making sure that it's clearly an issue that will be debated one way or the other.
I agree with you.
Instead of ignored as it usually is.
That's right. And you know, Hillary becomes the heir presumptive to Obama, so that it's not as if he's leaving like so many lame duck presidents do, mm-hmm. feeling that, you know, this will be the end of his heritage. But obviously, she comes right out and she says, and I'm with him on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even took credit for saying that a lot of the things that were included within the
sure.
context of the new plan were her ideas. And we should note that Bernie Sanders also fully endorsed the plan on the Democratic side. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, not as much.
So
two issues there. One being, as Jeb Bush said, President Obama has proved again why he will go down as one of the most liberal and divisive presidents in the history of our nation. Ted Cruz. So one of the concerns, of course, is the executive action that mm-hmm. he is taking and the constitutionality of that. Although Ted Cruz went right to the heart of the matter and said, in an ad with the president in body armor and in a tactical helmet, saying, "Obama wants your guns."
Yeah, that was...
Which is much more straightforward of saying this guy is out. Which, by the way, when you look at... And I've looked at it three different ways, trying to figure out how you can take that away from... Because he even said, the president said in his remarks yesterday, we're not looking to take anyone's... This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to... He even acknowledged that it was rather... It didn't have that much depth. He was only doing what he could do within the power of an executive action.
Yeah. But that fear is out there on the right that, you know, that Obama does want to take guns away.
To which I say, good.
Well, and the truth of the matter might be if Obama could snap his fingers tomorrow and make every gun go away, he probably would do it. So, you know, and Ted Cruz isn't entirely, I don't think he's entirely wrong.
No, he may not be wrong, but he can be evil.
I think it's, I don't think that
that's
is
not
the
what's
purpose.
On the table right now, but right. I think if, I mean, you know, I think Obama probably would want to remove as many guns as he possibly could. And if we had met with all the families that he met with, I'm sure maybe we might feel the same way, or maybe you already do feel the same way.
I already do feel the same way.
Yeah.
That helps explain the fear on the right a little bit, though, I think, too.
Yeah. Have you ever written a column which is so provocative you've gotten a death threat?
No, I don't think so.
You haven't arrived yet.
I've gotten some nasty things, but never a death threat.
Nastygrams.
Nastygrams, yeah.
Yeah, we get our share.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It was interesting to see because the crowd in the room was so fascinating, because there were obviously Gabby Giffords was there and behind many of the family members, as I mentioned, from Newtown, Sandy Hook. Amy Schumer was in the crowd, a comedian, a cousin of Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, not close cousin, but
no, and but a gun control advocate whose movie was playing during a cinema shooting last year, and has come out very forcefully against gun violence. Let's take a break. We have letters. We'll get to those, and we will. That'll bring us up to news time at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Yum Yum Noodle Bar, Woodstock and Kingston, offering Southeast Asian street food and other Asian specialties, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week, yumyumnoodlebar.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. The voice that you hear that perhaps is unfamiliar to you is Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, who's joining us for the first time, and we couldn't be more delighted. And editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, is on her way.
Stuck in traffic,
and
we love her. We miss her.
In 35 minutes, she'll get a little show in. That'll be great. Anyway, we have letters, and that'll bring us up to our break, so let's break those out.
Okay. So the one thing I want to make clear is that keep them short, folks. All right. Paul, aren't the people who run out and buy more guns every time the president mentions gun safety exhibiting paranoia, a form of mental disorder? You can comment, Chris, if you have something to say at any point.
A form of mental disorder? No, maybe some paranoia.
I think it makes sense that if you have a presidential candidate or others who are saying Obama is after your guns, that it makes sense that people who are concerned about that will go out and get guns.
Right. Yeah. William says, when automobiles started being significant causes of death and injury, laws began to appear. There was a beginning method, which, after passage of time, in capital letters, started to make sense. The president's action is another beginning. Interesting. And Denise says, so the left, among whom I proudly count myself, needs to produce a picture of a grieving parent with a caption, "The NRA wants your children."
Well, I'm sure that has already been done, but...
And Scott says, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the mass shootings are terrible. Does the loss of a small number comparatively at the hands of a mentally deranged shooters justify the loss of constitutional rights for millions? If we erode our constitutional rights for each handful of people with a grievance, where will we be? The terrorists want to take our constitutional rights. Should we let them because the Constitution negatively impacts them? I call for improved mental health and thug control.
And so my question is, how does this particular call, these particular rules and plans that are being put forward by the president, erode our constitutional rights?
As I have mentioned too many times, I wrote my doctoral dissertation on this very subject about the mentally ill and what happens. And we do know that it is, simply put, the most stigmatized group in America. And I think some people are very concerned that when you say, okay, we have to call out those people who are mentally ill and hold them responsible, not give them guns and the rest, that you're adding one layer to the stigma. We had a lot of calls on that yesterday, Joe, and I find it to be a very important question.
But Scott's argument in that in his letter seems to be that because of the we're using that as an excuse, but that our Constitution, in his words, is being eroded by these restrictions and by this plan. And I don't quite know.
I don't think there's anything Obama did yesterday that erodes anybody's constitutional rights.
But if you were the NRA, you would.
Really? I mean, because everything
they believe anything on this issue is a chink in the armor, and that they lose. It's well on the way to taking away gun owners' rights.
Well, the steps that he took yesterday are things that are already in place in states like New York. And the things that are already in place for other gun dealers. So, to me, what he did yesterday is not a constitutional issue. I don't see that. And also, to go to your point earlier, there was a mental health component to what he did yesterday too.
Yeah, $500. So. Yeah.
Samuel said, however one may feel about previous executive actions this president has taken, the action takes yesterday falls clearly within the constitutionally outlined responsibilities of the chief executive. I'm not going to read the rest of it because it goes on a little longer. Joe says, if the government were to announce an attempt to outlaw hammers,
hammers would you run out to get some in response?
I do think it's fair to say that an executive action is not the ideal way to do something like that.
Well, he said that. But we
tried it. It didn't work. We're going to take a break. We have our news break at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we'll continue with other issues and, of course, get more of your letters. WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and it's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our group to you this morning. We'll get back to other issues, and then we'll read some mail as well. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe.
And Times Union columnist Chris Churchill joins us for the first time. It's very nice to have you with us, sir.
Good morning.
And Judy Patrick will be with us.
Supposedly.
Right. We're getting maybe down to the wire. I feel bad because she's in traffic. She called right before the show and said, I'm in horrible traffic, but
I'll
be there.
We heard it was terrible.
Yeah.
Who told us this morning that instead of coming up on exit 24 where the accident was, our Stacey Perry Rosenberg, that she went all the way around to exit 23 to take the freebie 90 around. That was the only way she could get here.
Yeah. It's so we await. And but meanwhile, we have things to talk about. Donald Trump said in an interview that
Ronald Grump.
I do think we deserve some points.
We've been good
for over the past 3 or 4 days.
We've been Trumpless.
We have been Trumpless. So here we go. We're back in the fold, because I think this is an interesting story. Donald Trump said in an interview that rival Ted Cruz's Canadian birthplace was a very precarious issue that could make the senator from Texas vulnerable if he became the Republican presidential nominee.
But he's still my friend.
Republicans are going to have to ask themselves the question, do we want a candidate who could be tied up in court for 2 years? That'd be a big problem, Trump said when he was asked about the topic. It'd be a very precarious one for Republicans because he'd be running and the courts may take a long time to make a decision. You don't want to be running and have that kind of thing over your head. Cruz responded to Trump's comments on Twitter later Tuesday evening by referring to an iconic episode of the sitcom Happy Days, in which the character Fonzie jumped over a shark. So a jump the shark moment for that campaign, according to Ted Cruz. So, but we've talked about this when he first entered
the race. We've had a ton of letters on this, Joe.
A conversation about the citizenship.
Yeah.
I've read a lot about it. I don't quite understand it, of why it isn't an issue, but I don't know.
Well, I mentioned Cruz really quickly in a column last week, and I was surprised that I got 5 or 6 emails about this issue.
Yeah.
So it's definitely circulating around out there. I read a PolitiFact thing. I read a few other things on it, and it seems like it's not. It seems like it's a dead issue. It seems like natural born citizen includes being born outside of the country to an American citizen. So it, to that's me, it the doesn't way, seem like where, it's a real issue.
Do you think, Chris, it might be that if it were a Democrat leftist candidate, if it was Bernie Sanders or somebody like that, and he had been born somewhere else, that the majority of this Republican right-wing Supreme Court might find cause?
That's a good question. I don't know. But we've seen this before, though. I mean, John McCain was born outside the country.
Romney.
Romney was born outside. Goldwater was apparently... Of course, all those guys lost, so that might be a warning for Republicans. But
right, that's a good point.
But
and also his father was born in Cuba. Yeah. His mother was born in Calgary, but was a U.S. citizen.
She was born in Calgary. I think he was born in Calgary. His mother.
Oh, that's right. He was born. Excuse me. Yeah. He was born in Calgary in 1970. Oh my God, I'm older than him. Oh. Good Lord.
You should talk.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm new to this.
I'm younger than him. So.
Try 1941.
So,
I think this is really about Trump trying to stop Cruz's momentum because Cruz is rising, ahead in Iowa, and I think he's rising in the polls nationally. And I think Trump is starting to realize that Cruz is probably his biggest rival, at least in Iowa.
Chris, whoever's there on a particular day. If anybody seems to be creeping up, he slaps him up around the head.
Right.
So here, but he's still my very good friend, you know, he says. And Cruz comes back and says, I have this vox pop I want to do for our WAMC audience. And the question will be, who would you rather see president, Cruz or Trump?
Those are the only two options.
Those would be the options.
And what the
you may not get very many calls.
You get a lot of calls.
Yeah.
You get a lot of calls because you get a lot of people who will say, oh, you know, Trump is the more dangerous in terms of the election. So therefore, I'd rather see Cruz because he's more likely he's so far to the right that he can't run fast enough to the middle.
I think one of the interesting things is whether this falls into the kind of xenophobia we've seen from Trump. I mean, to saying that somebody, he's kind of implying in a way that Cruz isn't American, right?
Right.
And he's also been...
Well, this is the same birther issue he used with Obama, right?
Right. And he's been hinting, too, that Cruz isn't evangelical. He said something about, you know, there aren't a lot of evangelicals who are from Cuba, which is kind of along the lines of saying, you know, he's an other, I think.
Although it is interesting,
and he even alluded to the fact that Cruz is probably Catholic, which is kind of a strange line of attack, given the fact that I thought we settled that when Kennedy was elected. You know, why is he bringing this up now?
Yeah. Well, he can't attack people in terms of, you know, divorces or things like that because, you know, he's had a few himself, although there was a major story in one of the tabs this morning about Mrs. Trump, the third or fourth. Mrs. Trump,
third, I believe.
Third, saying she was staying out of it because she's her own person and she doesn't think it's appropriate. And I was just thinking about my musical instrument, the trumpet. The trumpet.
Oh, okay.
All see right. Now?
Yes, I gotcha.
Anyways, you know, it'll be interesting to see if this works. Everything that... Every time Trump has done this kind of stuff, it has had an effect. So we'll see if it does slow Cruz down. But
we'll move on to another story as well.
One thing really fast.
Yes.
I saw the latest polls this morning.
Yes, sir.
National polls. Forget about Iowa and New Hampshire. This guy Trump is way, way out ahead of everybody. Way out ahead of everybody.
But will he still be out ahead if he loses in Iowa? I mean, so much of his... persona is about winning. You know, he's all about winning, winning, winning. If he loses a couple.
Well, he's already told them in Iowa. He gave one speech where I think he said they were stupid. Remember that he was looking at them and he says, no, it's the chutzpah factor. It's, you know, it works for him.
Yeah.
Let's move on to some other topics. One more, at least, before we go to the break. And that is the interesting story about New York City's homeless between a bit of a a standoff, if you will, between the governor and the mayor. Governor Cuomo says the plight of homeless people in freezing city streets is a moral issue that demands immediate action. Mayor Bill de Blasio promises the New York City workers are out looking for anyone in danger and are there to help. But even as the political talk has intensified with the governor and the mayor engaged in yet another dispute over who is doing more on the issue, the people who are actually out there are saying that there's not much change, the people who are homeless. And Judy's here. One moment while I get the door. There you go.
Hi, Jude.
I apologize.
Hey. Judy Patrick is the editor of the Daily Gazette, and she joins us this morning. Was in horrible traffic.
I was. You know, I live a minute from work, so I'm not used to the traffic battle. And yeah. Hats off to all those people that fight that every day.
You bet.
God
you
bless
bet.
Them.
You bet.
It's very nice to have you here. So we're just getting into the story about New York City. And the homeless issue and the debate between the governor and the mayor, Alan.
Of all the great mysteries of the entire universe that I will never understand is why Andrew Cuomo feels he has to beat up the mayor of New York. I don't get it. I don't think anybody likes it. I think, look, de Blasio is not a popular mayor. He's an unpopular mayor. Nevertheless, Cuomo just keeps on beating him up around the head. And I don't understand it because I think it's bad for Cuomo. I tell his people that. I don't get it. I think it makes him look like a bully. And he takes on this thing. This is a mayoral function. It turns out that the mayor has had basically the same kind of orders out there that the governor has now, which is, you know, if people are in danger, get them off the street and give them a place to go. When the tabs interview and the others interview the homeless, they say, we don't want to go inside. And they're dangerous places, so we don't want to go in. This, it seems to me, is another example of a needless fight that basically Cuomo has brought on.
Certainly a weird issue to have a grudge match over. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. It kind of makes them both look like the homeless aren't their real concern, that their real concern is to score political points, which is not a good look.
So are you saying this is what this was all about? This was not about getting the homeless off the streets? This upstate has nothing to do? This is all grandstanding?
In my opinion?
Yes.
Yes. In my opinion, absolutely. And it's consistent with what has gone on up until this point. We hear stories that the governor is going out trying to recruit somebody who will run against de Blasio and beat him, you know, senseless in the election, which may happen, by the way. But in fact, that's the history. And unlike Chris, who seems to be less unhappy with the Cuomo thing, I think Cuomo is the guy who keeps bringing it. I don't get that. Certainly it isn't de Blasio. Finally, de Blasio, after all the attacks, turns around and says, please, please don't do that to me anymore. Please don't do that to me anymore. And the governor says, you see, he attacked me.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly all the homeless advocates we talked to this week, they didn't know what the order meant, what they were supposed to do, whether they're supposed to do differently, and whether there'd be sanctions if they didn't do whatever the mayor or the governor was asking.
Yeah. It kind of came out of the blue, too, and none of them seemed to have been warned about it or to have had any inkling that it was coming.
Well, again, he's the governor, not the mayor. There are certainly mayoral functions and there are gubernatorial functions. Bratton, who, by the way, is his own man, the police commissioner, comes out and says, we're doing that already. That's exactly what we're doing. So what is he pulling here?
Meanwhile, the mayor did appoint a deputy mayor for Health and Human Services yesterday who vowed to continue to improve efforts to help the homeless. The New York Times piece this morning does make the case, much as both Judy and Chris were alluding to just a second ago, and that is that throughout these efforts, really nothing has changed. The same number of people are out in the streets. It is very, very cold, and the problem still exists.
Right. I think if we had gotten this order maybe in October, September, it would have helped people prepare. I don't know. I don't know whether there was a lot of planning done on the governor's behalf before he issued this executive order. It's interesting the use of executive orders, don't you think?
Yeah. A lot of people, they're all doing it now, you know.
It's very trendy.
And my mom would say, they're all doing it now.
I want to do one. Can I do one?
What would your executive order be?
I don't know. Free coffee for everybody.
I never do that here at WAMC.
I mean, the marijuana changes were executive order, correct? Isn't that correct?
I'm sorry?
The marijuana changes.
The medical marijuana changes.
Executive orders.
Yes.
Presidential gun decisions yesterday, that was executive orders.
Oh, yeah. Well, the presidency is different with the Congress than the legislature. We all knew that Cuomo had not only the Assembly with him on a lot of this stuff, but also we always suspected it was the Senate. That is, until we read the tapes from Skelos talking to his kid about how he hated Cuomo. We'll get him. We'll get him. So, but I think what happened is that Cuomo has always protected the Republicans in the state Senate. So he could pretty well have what he wants.
It's also interesting in this article in the New York Times of how many people they went up to and said, have you been, most of them said they hadn't been addressed by police or any officials. Some had had offered to be taken to shelters, and they all said, I don't want to go to a shelter.
Right.
I have a really bad experience in the shelter, and I don't want to go back to a shelter.
Sure.
Which obviously is a key to this problem and an issue in and of itself.
And one of the things that kind of made people curious about Cuomo's executive action was this aspect of it that it was going to be mandatory that people go to
A certain Civil Liberties Act issue here.
Yeah.
Do you have to take them to court in order to take them in?
Right. It made people worry if they were waiting at the bus stop in cold weather, they were going to get swept up and taken to a shelter or something.
Good point.
Images of vans sweeping the streets,
hauling
people to some shelter.
There are all those subway grates.
Let's
and churches and things like that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will get to some mail. We have that, and we also have other topics to get to. Judy Patrick is here. So is Chris Churchill and Alan Chartok. We will be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Marriott. With 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space, with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation, Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. Cowan's Auctions, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations. George E. Heigl for consultations, 518-369-7994. And Syracuse University, now offering online part-time bachelor degrees, scholarships available for New York State residents, parttime.syr.edu/BPS.
Welcome back to the roundtable.
Did I say something funny?
No.
We're all supposed to call Joe Chief.
we're going to go to some letters, and then we're going to end with another topic. We got a lot of letters on Trump and gun violence everything. And the homeless, and so it's a melange, and we will present that to you now.
Okay, so Stu says, Ted Cruz, a Canadian, eh?
That's how they do that, right?
Okay, and then
they like hockey. Maybe
and oh boy, oh god, this is too long. Hello, panel. Your discussions on gun control and gun violence have become tedious and repetitive, repeating all the old stock phrases and attacks that probably make you feel better, but do not address the problem. That's all I'm going to read it at because it's too long. Great show this morning, says Franz. I really appreciate the tone of the discussion. Very thoughtful. To Alan's comment that Cuomo looks like a bully when he picks on de Blasio, I agree. By now, we know that Cuomo is a bully. He has a hard time hiding this in the case of de Blasio. In fact, because de Blasio publicly called him on it. And I want to just respond to that and say he didn't call him on it till it got to be really a daily whipping in the public square. And then finally he said, well, please, don't do that anymore. Tom says, Judy needs to move to the light, please, upstage left. Tom is the guy who watches.
Is that right?
No, you're okay.
You're fine right now. Tom is our stage manager. He watches it on the video, which most people don't, but they can.
Right now, but it is primarily a radio show, and right now moving Judy would cause a lot of.
I agree with you, Chief. Okay.
But you have the chief hat on.
And Robert takes some issue with something I didn't mean. He thinks I meant it badly. I said there are subway grates, and he said, you have a heart of gold. No, it's just that people choose where they want to be, and they can find places to go. Scott says, is Cuomo's homeless order an unfunded mandate?
It is an unfunded mandate, isn't it? I mean, there's no money attached to it.
I would assume that he's telling the New York City police, who happen to work for the, you know, for the mayor, pick him up. And Joel says something nice. Chris Churchill, that's you, Chris.
That's me.
Yeah. Good morning. Nice to hear Mr. Churchill on the program. His writing is always in-depth, balanced, and nice to have him on the forum. Great show, as always. And you say?
I don't know. What do I say?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very nice.
You say, thanks, Mom.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. Right.
And let's see here.
It's fun initiating the new guy, isn't it, Judy?
Cynthia says, I'm a regular listener to the roundtable. I would like you to consider how you use names of candidates in the roundtable discussion. You're currently referring to Donald Trump or Trump. You just said Cruz, yet you consistently call Hillary Clinton Hillary, not Clinton, and not usually Hillary Clinton. I suggest you address all candidates equally. Have a rule that you follow, as does the New York Times.
Well, I think this has been addressed many, many, many times by many, many, many different outlets, mostly broadcast outlets, and that is because you have two Clintons, much like you had two Bushes, that you would call George W. and George H.W., that Hillary and Bill are both very much in the news cycle. So there is a Hillary versus, you know, Bill connotation. Also, I would note that in a lot of times, especially in Hillary's advertising and her logo and everything is simply Hillary.
Like it's Jeb.
Right. Jeb. So I do think that is that has a lot to do with it, especially with her husband, Bill, also being very much part of the news cycle and part of the campaigning that's going on. So I think that is something that is done just to expedite things.
Okay. So W says, Bill M says, like Judy Patrick, I may have missed it, but has the panel discussed Bernie Sanders' speech on Wall Street? The Trump talk is trite in comparison.
Well, we do have that on our agenda,
and we do.
And we will get to that momentarily.
Yeah,
and it is on our agenda.
Correct. And Tom said, Trump, Cruz, if either are elected as president, I'm on my way to Canada or maybe Sweden. Dear Roundtable, says Robert, the consequence of taking our guns away would be effectively to give inordinate power to the military. I think it is highly unlikely that more than very few members of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of our government, present or future, would want that to happen. That's Robert. Thank you, Robert. Marcy says, why doesn't anybody talk about the second half of the Second Amendment, which says well-organized militia? I did yesterday quite a bit on my show, by the way. Why isn't this an issue with the discussion? Are the guys out there in Oregon a well-organized militia? I don't think so.
Or a disorganized militia.
Yeah. I did raise that very issue yesterday, that the Second Amendment, well-organized militia, do you think a million people running around with guns is a well-organized anything? The militia, not, I don't think. It has the potential to be, I suppose, if the government decided to take over or do something bad.
Let's get to two more letters, and then we'll move on to our final topic.
Thank you for that reminder.
Well, we just have five
minutes. I hear you, and I respect you. Dear Roundtable, I find the GOP to be ridiculous on this point. They raised a ruckus about Mr. Obama with an actual U.S. birth certificate, but turn a blind eye to Mr. Cruz, who actually has a Canadian birth certificate. Oh, the irony, says. And the guns that existed 200 years ago were very different than the guns available today. Oregon. We have time for one more, Joe?
Go ahead.
Okay. I understand that the cause of the outpost takeover was the jailing of two ranchers for arson. I hear they served a sentence but was resentenced because of the short term. 4 years for grass fire seems ridiculous. Can you guys address that part of the event? Chris, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think we've been addressing that over a period of time.
Let me go back to the letter before that, if I'm going to address one. It's true that guns today are very different than guns 200 years ago, but isn't free speech very different today than it was 200 years ago?
Could be.
I mean, there was no Facebook, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right. There wasn't the ability for one person to reach. And I'm not saying that that's not a reason to limit assault weapons or anything, but I'm just saying it's an argument that could be made that very little is the same as it was 200 years ago.
So there are a lot of gun letters, Oh, and John says, thank you, Joe, for mentioning Bernie Sanders' support of President Obama's gun control efforts. I was surprised Alan didn't do that himself when he spoke of Hillary Clinton's response to the same.
Ooh, so speaking of Bernie Sanders, made a fiery speech on Tuesday, laid out his plan to break up two big-to-fail commercial banks, and pointedly attacked Hillary Clinton for taking speaking fees from the financial industry and, in his view, not going far enough in her plan to regulate Wall Street. The criticism of Mrs. Clinton was some of Mr. Sanders' strongest to date and came after he had frequently refrained from such direct attacks, but now it's just a few days to the to the caucuses and the primary,
we
would expect this. Yeah.
And he's doing very well. And frankly, it is a fair comment because I do think Hillary is perceived, or Mrs. Clinton is perceived as being very close to the Wall Street crowd. And I think it's a fair point to raise.
Perceived, and that perception is valid. I mean, she has been very close to the Wall Street.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is a really fascinating point in when it comes to the campaign itself, but also these banking financial issues are fascinating, don't you think? And the article in the speech talked a little bit about these things, and those kinds of issues are the things you really would like to see elaborated in the campaign. Sure, Sanders is going after Hillary for being too close, but let's talk about, well, where do they really stand? Should banks sell insurance? You know, those kinds of real issues.
I hate to admit this, but I learned more about this banking issues through the Big Short movie than I thought I ever would.
It was wonderful.
I learned a lot that I didn't know. I mean, it was obviously boiled down, but you're absolutely right.
Boiled down, though, Joe, is they're too big to fail.
Yeah.
And we'll pick them up except for the one we don't like.
And let's see where the Republicans stand on all these issues.
Some of what Sanders was saying, though, was a little bit beneath the president, maybe. I mean, when he's talking about how much ATM fees should be, that seems, I don't know, a little trivial to me.
When you add it all up, it's not so trivial.
Yeah, I know. But is that really a presidential issue to say that ATM fees should be capped at $2?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we start to decide what presidential issues there are, I could give you a long list of some real nonsense that goes on in these campaigns from both sides.
Yeah, well, and the old adage, of course, that all politics is local. When it comes down to your local ATM or the stoplight on the corner of Main and Broad, well, then that becomes an issue.
Do you want Bernie to talk about the stoplight?
Well, I'm not saying but I am saying that I think it resonates certainly with people who are in a town hall meeting listening to a man running for president of the United States.
Yeah, well, that may be true.
And interestingly, he did come out on the gun issue, which he has been somewhat absent on because of Vermont voters.
We are out of time.
Oh, no.
But I thank Judy for being here. Thank you very
much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your patience.
Can you come back tomorrow?
Perhaps.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that. Alan, thank you very much. Chris, great to have you on the program.
It was great to be here.
Thank you very much. We'll have you back.
You were great, Chris.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.